This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good afternoon and welcome to Enterprise Explores, the show where we help you navigate the ever-changing universe of business from the headlines to the bottom line. Today, we're exploring what Taiwan-based VC firm AppWorks is looking for in Malaysia, but also the Southeast Asian startup ecosystem with Sophie Chu, principal leading the Southeast Asia arm at AppWorks. Founded in 2009, AppWorks provides two main services that cater to startups in two different stages. There's, of course, AppWorks Accelerator, which helps seed stage companies go from zero to one. And there's AppWorks Funds, which provides financing to help growth stage startups scale faster. There's also AppWorks School, quite interestingly, which provides education to talents and prepares them for a career in the startup world. So even if you don't want to be a founder and build your own company, maybe you want to work for a founder at some of your favorite startups. Now, AppWorks, based on the website, I just looked at it this morning, has about 532 active startups and around 1,622 founders in its alumni network. Its ecosystem has raised a total of $5.8 billion in funding to reach a total valuation of around $32 billion. Now, Sophie is leading AppWorks expansion efforts into Southeast Asia, connecting with and investing in promising founders across the region. So it's going to be interesting to see her, to listen to her take and what she's looking for here. Prior to AppWorks, she had 10 years of public equity experience and was part of the portfolio management team at Neuberg Berman, focusing on emerging market opportunities. And before that, was a research analyst at houses such as Credit Suisse, JP Morgan, and London-based Autonomous Research. Today, we're going to talk about Sophie's role at AppWorks, the mandate given to her by HQ over in Taiwan, and how her background informs her approach to supporting and investing startups in general. We'll also talk about her time at AppWorks and the key lessons learned and the criteria that she's paying attention to before investing in portfolio companies and insights into the venture capital landscape here in Southeast Asia. If you have any thoughts or questions, you can WhatsApp us on our U-Mobile number. That's 018-789-8899. Sophie, welcome to the studio. How has your trip to KL been this time around?
Hi, Roshan. Thank you for having me today at the show. This is my first time recording a radio, so a little bit nervous. And I haven't recovered fully from my voice, a bit rusty, so sorry, friends. Hope you can tolerate that, but thank you. Yes, so I'm Sophie. I now lead the Southeast Asia arm at AppWorks. Before that, I came with my 10-year equity experience here. Many people ask me why you want to make a change, because it's not very typical. The truth is because I met my husband, who's a founder, tech startup founder himself. So the funny story is that at the time we met, and he's also very naive, you know, the type of first-time founder, that he said, oh, you're an investor. So can I ask you some question? How do you define product market fit? I'm fundraising. How do I calculate my valuation? I'm like, dude, I don't know. I mean, I cover big companies like Alibaba.
I don't worry about product market fit. They've already got it.
They got too much product market fit, and also they don't have a survival issue.
Yeah.
So, but that just intrigued me, right? Like, who can answer all these questions? So, and I searched a bit and found, actually, venture capital. They are the people to answer, and people introduced AppWorks to me.
And that's how you ended up at AppWorks. Now, let's talk specifically about your role at AppWorks, right? So you're now the principal focused on Southeast Asia and, I guess, opportunities in the region. So talk to us a little bit about your role and, I guess, what's the mandate for the region?
So AppWorks actually, so you already covered it at the beginning that AppWorks, we started in 2009 first as an accelerator. But our accelerator is a bit different, that when our founding partner started it, he's definitely inspired by Y Combinator. So he came back with his family from New York and want to do like a Y Combinator. But then after the research, he found that in Asia, the entire investor value chain is also not very mature. Think about it, it's 15 years ago. So that's why he decided that we will not do exactly Y Combinator. We will do a free one, because we do a free accelerator, meaning we don't charge any cash. We also don't charge any equity dilution.
Oh, wow.
So it's free. So because it's free, then we can really welcome and help more founders. No matter you are a very early stage or you are second, third time founder, you can always join this community. And it become really more like a community. And or we actually call it a founder accelerator. It's not a startup accelerator. It's for the founder to come here, learn with your peers, and grow together. Actually, that's why we see a lot of great things happening. For example, some founders ended their startups and joined other people. Or they just collab more. And because it's free, right? So everything builds on a very neutral basis. And that's why in the past 15 years, the whole community, as you mentioned, we have now 532 active startups, 1,600 founders. And in the past 15 years, we've already seen 15 IPO companies from the community. That Wow. include four companies that's not invested by us. It's really just out from the community. And that's we're very proud of that, because the accelerator has been helping so many founders, even with, you know, not from our funding, meaning we really have no strings attached, really just want to create something for them. And that model still continues till today. So that accelerator is still taking 50 startups every year and still the same free model. Of course, then we have to survive ourselves, right?
Yes, so the next question is...
Yeah, so that's why we started our fund. In 2012. So 3 years after we started the accelerator, we started our first fund, VC fund. Right now, we've already finished investment of three funds, and that in total was $220 million. And now we are raising our fund four, and the fund four, we are hitting our target now and still raising, but likely to be a fund more than $200 million.
What's the purpose? What is Fund 4 going to be focused on?
Yeah, so back to the purpose and our relationship with Southeast Asia. Mm. So our accelerator, when we launched, yes, it's in Taiwan. But so along the way, we see some interesting happening. For example, 2013, there was a first Thai startup come to apply the program. We were like,
And this is before you?
No,
left Taiwan.
No, we haven't done any. No, we only, at the time we only have Taiwan.
Oh, wow.
So we're just came surprised, to you. Like, you're a Thai startup. Why are you here? But then, of course, through him, we understand, it seems Southeast Asia seem have the same need because there's just no such founder community. Again, it's 15 years ago. And then, but we didn't pay so much attention because remember, 2013, we're still running our Fund 1. It's very small fund. Funded mostly from ourselves. So it's until after our Fund 2 in 2016, then at the time, also a Malaysia startup coming out. Guess who? It's Signature Markets. Oh. I believe many of you should know.
Yeah.
Edwin. Yeah. I think now last year they also even opened their offline store. So we're really proud of what they have achieving so far. So Edwin from Signature Market came out, and then we realized, it's serious. Like Singapore, Malaysia startups are all in similar need and we can help. And so when Edwin joined, and then soon in Singapore, we also found some startup that joined our accelerator. So we really decided that our program is going to be regional now. So since 2016, APRA's the whole program and also the VC investment focus all shift to include Southeast Asia. That's since then.
So we have to thank the Thai startup for making you
the very
making
first step,
at works aware of Southeast Asia. So you've got a bunch of different services, right? So the accelerator, the VC fund, the school as well. Is that model being extended over to Southeast Asia?
Of course, that first, our accelerator is already a regional program, right? As I mentioned, now every year we take in 50 startups and 70% is from Southeast Asia.
Wow.
And this year, we actually launched our first Malaysia cohort. So meaning it's dedicated to Malaysia startups. And we'll have not just, they will be not just having the regional program, but also will have their own dedicated on the ground, offline kind of setup, design of a series of events for them in Malaysia. So the accelerator for sure. And then VC investment, we've been investing into Southeast Asia also since 2016. Mm-hmm. And that is already 40% of our entire portfolio. That's from that's startup in Southeast Asia. APRA School is something we launched in 2015 in Taiwan only. At the beginning, it's just a really, we also register it as a nonprofit organization. It's free for the students. We don't take student. We take people who have had 2-3 year work experience. But if you want to become a software engineer, you can come to our program. We train you, become an engineer, and we pair you with a startup that we work with. We do that because it's all from for our North Star. Our North Star is by founder for founder. We do everything for founders. And for founder, tech, talent recruiting is definitely one major pain point. So that's why we do school. School, yes, is this initiative only in Taiwan so far, because again, it's a nonprofit. We actually, it's a very loss-making entity. Think about it, we train students for free, right? So it's something we are still iterating. We still, from the result, it's great because mm-hmm. we've trained 1,000 engineers. 80% mm-hmm. of them now work for the startup we work with. Mm-hmm. And also, even some startup, when they become growth stage, they can launch their dedicated classes, meaning they can pre-choose. Oh, these are the candidate I want. You train them for me.
So there's a ripple effect from there.
Yeah, so I think from result, it's really good. From a business operation, we are really loss making. So once we could tune the model further, I mean, of course, we would love to have it done more in Southeast Asia. But mm-hmm. yes, that's the only one that's still only in Taiwan.
So if you've got to go into a few messages when we come back, we'll talk about AppWorks' general investment strategy and if there's anything they're particularly paying attention to here in Southeast Asia. Of course, what you're watching for in terms of startups. Folks, I've been speaking with Sophie Chu. She's principal leading the Southeast Asia arm at VC firm AppWorks. And you've been listening to Enterprise Explores. I'm Roshan Gunnison. Keep it here to BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Begin Free Malaysia. BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
BFM 89.9, welcome back to Enterprise Explores, the show where we help you navigate the ever-changing universe of business from the headlines to the bottom line. I'm Roshan Gunnison, and today we're talking about what Taiwan-based VC AppWorks is looking for here in Southeast Asia with Sophie Chu, principal leading the Southeast Asian arm for the VC firm. Now, Sophie, earlier you gave us some great context around AppWorks, a little bit about yourself as well, and how this all started in 2009, a year after actually BFM, with an accelerator program, which was free, no equity, no cash charges. And then in order to pay the bills, a VC fund was formed a few years later. And now you're raising Fund 4. I think Fund 1, 2, 3 raised around $320 million that was invested, and overall about 40% of funds invested in Southeast Asian startups. So no stranger to the region. With that in mind, talk to us about AppWorks' investment strategy and investment mandate, right? Generally, are there any particular themes that the funds look for? Any particular focuses?
So the same to our North Star or our mission, right? We started really we want to become by founder for founders, right? Mm-hmm. That's why we do a free accelerator at the beginning, and even the Apple school we previously covered, right? It's a free school to train people become software engineer to solve the recruiting problem for founders, right? So meaning, because having this mission, even our VC fund investment thesis is entirely about founder. It's very founder-centric, meaning that means we are basically sector agnostic. We are also round agnostic. So we can invest in any tech startup in any industry. You are agri-tech, you are SaaS, you are food tech, you are AI, blockchain. It's all okay. And meaning any round. So actually our VC fund invests from seed stage all the way can do like Series B or C, the growth stage. Actually, in fact, we have the latest ever stage we did was Series E.
Wow.
And so our ticket size varies. That for the early stage, we can do 100, 200, 500, 750K or so. And up to the growth stage, we can do up to 10 or 50 million as a first check. But of course, if you must ask the sweet spot, of course, that's still 1 to 5 million would be the better sweet spot. But never say never. We don't have a hard range, actually, internally. Everything is very founder-centric, same as for our accelerator or for our fund, meaning we just want to be supporting the founder who have the best, you know, the determination, strategic thinking, execution, etc. The founder quality is what we emphasize the most.
So when you are here in the region, traveling from Jakarta to KL to Singapore, looking for startups to invest in, yes, you've got this round agnostic and this sector agnostic approach, but I'm sure you're paying attention for things, right? You mentioned a few things there that drive and all. Can you elaborate a little further in terms of what you're particularly looking for in startup founders?
So actually, this morning I was just reading the Twitter X that Y Combinator partner Paul Graham. Oh, okay. Yeah, he just tweeted one this morning saying that there was a founder building up something not related to AI. And he's saying that, oh, great, now you're not touching something that's basically too heated by all the Stanford graduates. Or even founder in the future years. And I think it definitely sounds a little bit sarcastic, but meaning that he's supporting founder to focus on things that you have your own insight, your own unfair advantage, rather than just simply chasing something hype, in the hype, right? So I think that's the same for us. That's why we, as I said, right, we are sector agnostic. And if you ask me what I'm looking for, the founder quality I mentioned, right, it's about resilience. It's about the determination. It's about how much you really want and you will make it. Because, you know, there are a lot of smart people. Mm-hmm. But being a founder, you got to be a little bit silly. Seriously. If you're too smart, you probably won't choose that. Because it's such a low odd. Only maybe 1 out of 10,000 of the founder could eventually make an IPO in the U.S. if you're from U.S. And how about the odd in Asia, right? It's very low chance. But why there are still numerous startups, thousands of startup founders chasing this dream, including my founder husband. Okay, come on. I have one in my household who's bootstrapping. No ever external, I mean, institutional funding, only some angel. I know a lot of Malaysia founder would resonate with that.
Empathize with that,
yeah. So meaning you got to be a little bit silly to be a founder. Because very smart people will calculate and be like, invest like me. So it's not. So what we are looking for is you definitely have a strong why, very strong why, and very strong inside. That's why you want to do it and you can do it well. And that's what we're trying to find out.
How important is, you know, this term is often used, right? Conviction. It's oftentimes used to describe some of the best founders. How important is conviction in their idea to you?
You mean the founder's conviction?
Yeah, the founder's conviction.
Of course, right? You got to stand with, fundraising. A lot of founders always ask about fundraising. Mm-hmm. And we actually, it's very simple. It's just a numbers game. It's about funnel. You just need to widen up the funnel as much as you can. In Taiwan, for example, one of our portfolio who's a three-time founder already and listed his company in Taiwan, he now jumped out and put it $1 million US dollar himself from his own pocket to do a new topic. Mm-hmm. He himself, when he does the mentor session with the founders in our accelerator, he said, my funnel started at least with 100 investors that I speak to. Then think about if you are a first-time founder. How many you should widen up your fundraising funnel, right? I think recently on Twitter, there was also a US tech founder. I think he unveiled his fundraising pipeline. It also start with 1,000, something like that number. So I think, sorry, I forgot why we're here. But,
we're talking about the importance of conviction, right?
Yeah, conviction. Yeah, so conviction is very important, right? You will face 900 no. Before you land with 100, that's maybe let's have a chat, and then land at the end 5 that really invest in you, right? So you're always facing a no.
While we're talking about fundraising, what do you see as some of the common mistakes that founders make when fundraising? Obviously, you've tapped on a few things there, or some of the red flags from your perspective, right? That you see this and you're like, this is not for me.
Well, I think of course. How much you are very confident and, you know, like have confidence in what you're doing. That's for sure by default. But at the if any simple thing, at least, or the basic thing is, of course, do the homework, right? Know who you are speaking to, what is this investor's appetite, their interest, and most important is how are you going to introduce your business, right? I mean, these are all the basic, but I want to use example like my husband. Because as I said, right, he's been bootstrapping and he's also want to do fundraising. And when he want to do fundraising and he's doing something, also, again, not a sexy topic, not a very easy to understand. It's IoT space, it's smart home, and it's definitely not the most, you know, easiest to grasp. So I tell him, you know what, you should just directly do a investor Q&A. List like 100 potentially questions that people might ask you. What are you building? What's IoT? What's the solution? What's the product? Are you a manufacturer? Are you a solution provider? Are you a system integrator? So list, you know, imagine you're someone who doesn't understand you at all use 100, you know, Q&A to describe, introduce yourself. That's a basic start to start with. And it's really helping the investor to understand you as well. And through the preparation, you are also prepare yourself for a fundraising meeting. So I think first, the kind of fundraising QA, you prepare for yourself, your company. Second is know your investor, try to do some research about them. And then, of course, you are more prepared. That's just the easy basic I would always recommend. And the third, I would say, is it's a long-term game. It's not that, I mean, a lot of things, 99% of oftentimes is about luck, okay? So, but that's the part we cannot control. So we control the 1%. So meaning it's also a long-term game. It's not that easy. You just have two meetings and boom, you got 10 million. Mm-hmm. It's not that easy, right? And most of the time, the VC want to know you for longer because it, especially early stage, right? It's mostly founder bet, actually, eventually. Because once we give you the money, you can also tell me next morning, say, hey, Sophie, I decided to pivot. I'm going to do a new topic, but then my money is yours and what can I do, right? So so meaning it's very founder bet. That's why VC, of course, will want to know you more, know you longer. So meaning as a founder, the third thing is you got to prepare the long-term game and it's better to build long-term relationship. Build up this, imagine, you always, that's why YC always said you need to spend 6 months ahead your real fundraising. For us, it's like we encourage founder to keep interact with your investor. Always send them like at least monthly or quarterly. Quarterly, I think is good. Quarterly update. Hey, I'm building this. This is my latest traction. We're launching something new. After a quarter, you say, see, I did it. I did my promise. I launched this. Oh, we faced some issue, but we managed to solve blah, blah, blah. That's also showing your capabilities, your execution. So keep it a long-term relationship. Keep regular update. I think that's the third basic thing my advice for every founder.
Sophie, your previous background, as you mentioned, 10 years in the public equity space, right? How did that, and before that you were a research analyst, how did that background and experience influence the way that you go about your job today?
I think we covered in the previous session that I changed my career all because I met my founder husband. So that's why I decided to suspend my 10-year career in the equity research and then later on equity investor at a large U.S. fund. When I did the transition, I was also a little bit not even impulsive as well and just thinking, oh, seems VC is a job that as the same, you are an investor, but you can really be impactful. You're helping a lot of startup founders directly, you know, supporting what they're building. And usually what they're building is disrupting this current world. So I was just really out of this impulsive decision and also want to help my founder husband, again, who's still bootstrapping. He's in Taiwan, so he cannot hear. It's fine. Oh. I can say here, not in Taiwan.
I'll go find him on LinkedIn and send him the podcast.
So at the time when I made the change, it's really out of just a courage and a very looking for something new and aspiring. And I was also very much inspired by our founding partner, Jamie, who started everything like this, right? As you can see, Apple started a model that's very founder-centric. Yeah. That's very different. But I can be honest here that with you. Also, this is a radio in Malaysia. My boss would probably couldn't hear. I actually regret in the month four.
Wow.
But also because at the time I was a new mom. I just had my first daughter. So I was a new mom. I changed my career and dumping my 10-year experience and trying something new. Although, yes, there's a lot of transferable knowledge and skill. Mm-hmm. For example, doing just, you know, market study, financial skill, all that. That's easy. Mm-hmm. But to look at startup, that's also a lot of new learning curve, right? Mm-hmm. How to guide a startup on their bottleneck in when they face like product market fit, go-to market. Those are very new to me, seriously. That's also my learning time. Mm-hmm. But then I got off, you know, that's why this job made me feel we all have to learn so fast, run so fast in order to really be helpful to the founder who are so brilliant. And they are also running, learning so fast every day. So at month four, I regret it. Actually, And I was secretly, you know, crying and like, oh, I shouldn't do this, such a silly choice. If I were still a fund manager at Neuberger Berman, I'd have having my 9-to-6 job and have a lot of analysts working under me. I cut my title to do this job at Appworx and also salary. I regret it, and I wrote an email to one of my mentors in the equity industry. Space. So I wrote to him, who guided me a lot in the past, saying, oh, I feel I made the wrong choice, da da da. And of course, they're all, we know each other for long, so I'm pretty confident if I say I want to come back, they will just take me. Also, I just left for 4 months, right? Yeah, not a huge difference. But then he wrote me back with a very inspiring email saying, Sophie, our team always really like you. We were sad to see you leave, but I always see you having something very different, innovative from many other equity people that we work with. I think that's because of your entrepreneurship. That's why at the time you chose to go to a VC rather than stay in this industry. And I feel quite inspired, actually. Mm-hmm. I feel, yes, I'm also really dumping myself into something really new, unexplored to me. And at the beginning, actually, yes, there was also part of it is I thought about for my daughter, I want to do something by example, showing her that, hey, you know what? You want to try something new? Don't worry. Even if you already have a 10-year career, bulge bracket, pay, you're still okay to make a choice. But yes, it's a steep learning curve. You got to conquer a lot. But I feel, so I stay, and then after 4 years now, I feel, yeah, I did feel I've conquered a lot and have built myself a very steep learning curve. So now I can feel more comfortable working with founders. So that's me, my story.
Wow. Thank you for the honesty. I think that was it's very good to hear that, you know, that a lot of times when people go into something new, it's like, oh, it was great, you know, everything went well. But no, the real story is that more often than not, when you try something new, especially because you were doing something for 10 years, the new venture can be very stressful, very hard. And then you can miss the relative comfort of what you knew how to do. You know, before we go into a few more messages, Sophie, could you talk to us a little bit about some of the success stories with regards to some of the investments that you've made in startups during your tenure at Appworx over the last 4 years now? Is that right?
So talk to
us about some success stories that you can tell us and some key lessons learned along the way.
I think because coming out from me being the principal leading the Southeast Asia arm, so I think I'll probably just use some examples that our successful Southeast Asia investment. So I think one of our very proud story would be Shopback. Shopback is a Singapore-based marketing solution company. Mm-hmm. So if you use their app, and on the app, you book anything on the e-commerce, for example, travel ticket, hotel rooms, or even buy something on Shopee or e-commerce. If you open Shopback app first and then make any transaction, that will lead, for example, you open the app and you select, let's say, Shopee or Agoda, it will link you to the Agoda's own app or page. And then you book your something. And then, but Shopback will, you will get Shopback reward, cash reward. So basically, they for the at the enterprise level, they are helping all these
Discovery and distribution.
It's more like loyalty program and cash rebate program. And so Shopback is a company started since 2014. And we met them in 2016, as I said, when we really started looking into Southeast Asia. We found them in Singapore. And then at the time, they were only in Southeast Asia. And we told them, hey, you know what? You should come think about Taiwan market. Taiwan e-commerce space is so big. It has a market size at least US 1 trillion. And you should come to Taiwan, have a look, because it's a bigger market. Taiwan has a strong uni economy. And then so he joined our accelerator. Remember, it's a free one. So he joined, the founders joined, and then we helped them land in Taiwan, have an office. And also they hire engineer from our Appworx school. And then they found, oh, Taiwan market indeed, e-commerce is big and uni economy is very strong. So they make really decent growth and even the uni economy. So then they prove their success in developed market. And then the next one, they expanded to Australia. And now they already become a company with more than $200 million US dollar revenue and with most of the profitability generated from developed market like Australia, like Taiwan. And then they use these, of course, resources to continue to build these emerging markets like Indonesia, like Southeast Asia, like Malaysia. So I think that's definitely one very inspiring story for us, that how we can help a startup to broaden their expansion and in terms of their business strategy, and then really help them achieve success. And that's just the very beginning, because right now we are also helping many of our startup, no matter in our accelerator or in our portfolio, from no matter Indonesia or Vietnam, trying to see this kind of opportunity. And that's also part of my view, that I think Southeast Asia really is very scattered, but any builder here, especially tech startup, you really need to consider, you really need to probably have the ability, show the ability, scalability to be across the market. That's also my usual advice to Malaysia founders as well, because one market is simply just not enough, seriously. If you want to build a VC back, actually, if you determine that this is something you want to build and it may not fit VC back the thesis, yes, you don't need VC. You just need to know what is the game you're building and what type of investor you're bringing. But from VC perspective, I would say multiple market is needed.
Yeah, so if you want to be VC back, you need that scale. You need to have that, you know, the ability to generate those returns for them over the longer term. And that will mean being bigger than one market. Sophie, we got one more break to go into. Then when we come back, we'll talk about some of the views on the current venture capital landscape, as well as how you view partnerships in your journey to scout and discover startups in the region. Folks, I've been speaking with Sophie Chu, principal leading the Southeast Asia arm at VC AppWorks, Taiwan-based VC AppWorks, and this is Enterprise Explores. I'm Roshan Gunnison. We'll be back in just a bit, so keep it here to BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Better Finance Management. BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, welcome back to Enterprise Explores, the show where we help you navigate the ever-changing universe of business from the headlines to the bottom line. I'm Roshan Gunnison, and today we're exploring what Taiwan-based VC AppWorks is looking for in Southeast Asian startups with Sophie Chu, principal leading the Southeast Asian arm of the fund, of the VC company. Now, earlier we got a sense for the story behind AppWorks, but also a bit of Sophie's story. So AppWorks now has raised three funds over the last 16 years or 14 years since 2009, whatever that math turns out to be, about $320 million raised so far, and now raising their fourth fund. And Sophie was previously, before her four-year stint here at AppWorks, was spent 10 years in public equities in portfolio management with Neuberger Berman, but also was a research analyst at Credit Suisse, JP Morgan, and London-based Autonomous Research. Sophie, so we've covered quite a bit of ground so far. And a big part of your job is going down to the ground and meeting founders and talking to them, especially given AppWorks founder-by-founder mentality, right? That can be difficult to do in the new market. So how do you think about partnerships or collaborations with local ecosystem players as you go about trying to find deals?
Yes, certainly. I think there are several aspects. First is because we are running our AppWorks Accelerator as a regional program for many years. I mean, it started 2009, but it really became regional since 2016. So that means the past 8 years, we've accumulated many, many founder network here, right? I think previous session we mentioned, we have 530 active startups in the entire region. I mean, Taiwan plus Southeast Asia, but if we include only the Southeast Asia one, that's 165. So through the 165, of course, that's already a first pretty big channel where they can refer us to a lot of great startup here. And the second thing is there's another initiative which we previous session we didn't cover, is we have another fund that's not that's our GP's own money. So it's not from our LP, so not the AppWorks fund. It's a fund that entirely funded by our own GP. It's called we call it Beacon Fund. And then for the fund, we already invested more than 20 VC in this region. And because we are the LP to all these VC, I think some notable ones like regional one in Singapore, like Open Space, like AC Venture, North Star, or like a lot. So more than 20. So They, of course, I'm really thankful to them. If you're listening, we're really grateful to you guys. I mean, as a VC, we are always like friends, I would say. Instead of like, I think it's very also very different to other investors, because at a VC world, although yes, maybe we might compete for a deal, but most of the time, I would say we are friends. Because
is even there a collaborative nature, like join in on the deal, that seems to be quite common.
Yes, very common, and we actually need each other, right? Yeah. Because once I invest, I also need you to continue, right, to my next. So I think that's why everyone is more like friend in the VC world. So the second channel is through our VC network, no matter is from the Beacon Fund portfolio that more than 20 funds. Or just in general, the VC network. And I think when I first, so I start to come to Kuala Lumpur very often since October. Like I'm here every biweekly. So I literally really commute. I'm really grateful at the beginning. It's really out from one particular founder and one particular VC. They too are very enthusiastic, helping me connect to many other people. And that just broadened my network to others.
Any shout outs you want to make while you're on air?
Yeah, sure. So I'm really, really grateful to StoreHub founder Wai Hong. Thank you. Thank you a million times. And of course, also another VC. I probably won't name. He's very low profile.
Yeah. So that one is even more interesting, right? Sophie, the venture capital landscape has, in the 4 years that you've been in it, it's been on a bit of a roller coaster, right? So 2020 was a very hot time. Interest rates continued to be low. Interest rates have gone up now, making it a bit more of a discerning environment. How has that changed the way that you've had to operate as a principal in the venture capital space?
Yeah, of course. I think if you look at the economy world, right, 2022 was a year of, you can imagine it's like the market's sick, all right, due to the COVID impact and all that. 2023, you can imagine it's like the sick person is trying to get up and recover. Mm-hmm. And of course, that we are at the time also all the global government are fighting against all the inflation issue, right? Mm-hmm. Of course, that's why the interest rate had to come up. But if you see like already, by the end of last year, even now, right? I think you can see that the rate hike cycle is probably already very to the bottom, the end.
Probably.
Yeah, it's to the end. And actually many Southeast Asia market are even may cutting the rate somehow because the consumption, because the growth, GDP growth, we probably need to give it a little bit boost. Mm-hmm. But the entire investment appetite has changed because I think previously when, you know, six, seven years ago when the investor coming to Southeast Asia to really give a strong boost to like company like Grab, like Gojek, like or even Shopee, right? These kind of companies, they are really, because at the time, it's like a zero interest rate forever type of environment. So if you imagine like tomorrow, the money is going to be cheap. And of course, today you want to spend it as much for the growth, right? Because it's, so you want to spend it first. That's why investor coming to Southeast Asia want to expedite the growth, use the money to burn for the growth. Mm-hmm. But now, fast forward to now, because of course we already built many successful cases. For example, Kasim in Malaysia, definitely the most iconic one as well. But now people become more sensible, right? It's no longer the zero interest rate forever, free money forever. It's a back into a normalization situation. That means the interest rate will just evolve according to the economy and also, of course, not like the cheap environment. So even in the U.S., I can share with you one of our founders recently went to the U.S. to fundraise. And his observation of the top tier VC now, they only back two type of startup. One, you're profitable, but you still manage to grow 20 to 50% year over year. Two, you're burning, but you have to grow more than 100%. Wow. The worst is in the middle. You burn, but you don't grow more than 50%. Then people are like, what the heck? So, sorry. So meaning the VC investor, the appetite change now is definitely sensible, healthy growth. And that's definitely very, I think it's just, it will just continue. Even if, yes, I think this year the investment world will be better, much better than last year, because last year we already seen quite many growth stage startup in Southeast Asia kind of correct their valuation or become more sensible, changing topic. And I think that really all drill down to a lot of early stage as well to really be more sensible. I think that's why, but the VC still got a lot of dry powder, actually. Mm-hmm. So VC are all there still if you look at the stats last year, the investment amount is still flat, yeah. but just more in the small deal, like earlier stage, earlier bet. So I think this year is going to be better, mm-hmm. given the world is normalizing, and then the VC dry powder is still there. But again, the appetite is still like that, as I said. Profitable. Oh, no, sorry. Don't say profitable. It's healthy growth. Because growth is still the soul of a startup. I really want to emphasize and highlight, because I think a lot of startups got scared, like, oh, I need to just become profitable. Mm-hmm. But I think, don't forget, as a startup, your biggest strength, advantage, versus those listed company, is your growth. So growth is very important, but healthy.
So interest rates have kind of been priced in at this point. Looking ahead, what do you then see as the main challenges for venture moving forward?
Challenges? I don't think so. I think venture capital is it will be a continuous effort, mm-hmm. right? Because venture capital position itself as the one in the most earliest in the entire investor value chain, isn't it? So the reason why venture capital exists is to take the risk. We are the one to take the risk and then to use our portfolio to diversify the risk among, let's say, 100 portfolio companies, and only 3 to 5 of them survive or really scale up to be mm-hmm. big. And the rest, no matter the company continue or not, but the rest are not generating the VC in return. For us, it's like dumping into the water. But it's fine because we support the rest 95 startups. And it means we are telling the world, hey, don't worry, you should come out. There will be investors taking the risk to back you up and backing you up for your potential failure as well, because the odds is just so low. So I think VC capital will just continue. And if you ask me any challenge, I don't think so. It's just adjusting, right? Adjusting mm-hmm. your investment thesis, continue to improve your thesis and improve the sourcing, right? How can you continue to attract the best founder? Because the best founder always can choose, right? Mm-hmm. They can choose who's on their cap, because they only have 100% to dilute. That's why we also always tell the founder, you should be really careful choosing your investor, because yes, money is important, but actually money is the same. So, but who come with a good value add, right? So that's what Apple is trying to do a lot. How can we add more value? And I can share one definitely is our founder community that's very sizable and collaborative and helping each other. And that's across the region as well. It's not single market. A second is Apple, we always, this is our one particular strength as well, that how we help ShopBack. In our last session, we discussed that. How we help ShopBack, right, to discover Taiwan can be a good market, plus one market. And in fact, we are actually helping quite many of our growth stage startup in our community, not just our portfolio, mm-hmm. to see the potential to in potential land or have business in Taiwan, and that provide them with a good additional volume and also unique economy. So, and in fact, the third... And also that Taiwan is a good market for exit as well. Taiwan, the Singapore exchange, the stock trading value for the whole year was $200 billion. Taiwan is 10 times, so it's 2 trillion. And then that's on par with Australia, and that's on par with Korea. That's 50% to Hong Kong. Me and our trading value per day is so liquid. And that means the exit potential possibility, the real exit is better. So I think that's also part of our strength, that we can bring the Taiwan value to many startups here.
And certainly a key concern for many founders as well, right? The ability to exit and look for different markets. Sophie, it's been a pleasure speaking with you. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much. It's my pleasure speaking to all of you.
Folks, I've been speaking with Sophie Chu, principal leading the Southeast Asia arm of AppWorks. And this has been Enterprise Explores, the show where we help you navigate the ever-changing universe of business from the headlines to the bottom line. If you missed any part of this conversation, you can catch the podcast on the BFM app or any of your favorite podcasting apps, whether that's Spotify or Apple Podcasts or anything else that you may use. Just look for Enterprise Explores. Keep it here at BFM 89.9, the Business Station.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, The Business Station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.